Cale Clark here. Thanks for listening to my podcast. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Relevant Radio and get a free phone. Don't delay. CharityMobile.com. That's CharityMobile.com.
Fascinating facts, candid conversations, and some levity to lighten your day. This is the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
It's Friday. It is February the 25th. It's the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. 888-914-9149 is the number to call. For free. It's toll free. 888-914-9149. You can also email the program, Cale, C-A-L-E, at relevantradio.com. And you can follow me on Twitter, at Cale Clark. C-A-L-E, Clark with an E. Had to think about that for a second. And the show account is at Cale Clark Show. Well, it's obviously day two of the Russian war against Ukraine. And on yesterday's program, I tried to give you a bit of a rundown about Russia's motives, what Putin's motives might be, what he might be thinking, what he hopes to gain by this. But we need to talk about the Ukrainian perspective as well. And so I'm joined right now on the program by a Ukrainian Catholic priest. He's somebody that I've been connected to on Twitter. Speaking of Twitter, I've always wanted to chat with him in person, and I'm really glad that he took the time to be with us today. He's a canon lawyer. He has a PhD. He's the executive director of the Metropolitan Andrei Sheptytsky Institute of Eastern Christian Studies at the University of St. Michael's College at the world-famous University of Toronto. Father Alexander Laschuk is my guest. Father Alexander, thanks for taking the time today. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's so great to have you. And I want to ask you, now, I believe you told me just, we were chatting just before the show started, that your parents are from the Ukraine. You were born in Canada.
Yeah, I'm born in the Toronto area. My grandparents are all from Ukraine. My mom's side, actually, today it's just inside Poland, just a walk from the border. But my grandparents are all from Ukraine, but I've been born here. That's where we wound up after the Second World War.
Okay. And what are you hearing right now from the Ukraine? What is the mood of the people? Is it hopeful? There have been obviously a lot of inspiring stories, like, for example, the 13 soldiers that gave their lives in the Black Sea on Snake Island yesterday. But what are you hearing about the mood of the people, and especially within the church in the Ukraine?
Well, I think certainly the people in Ukraine, they are freedom-loving people. I think actually the people of Ukraine have a lot in common with the people of the United States. They value their freedom, and they will fight for it. And so they are people of hope who have great faith in God, that God is with them during this crisis. But at the same time, you know, there is fear in certain places where, you know, especially children, you know, are experiencing shock and awe techniques. They're sitting through air raids and all these horrible things that people should not have to endure. And that's a real trial for the Ukrainian people right now.
What is the relationship like in the Ukraine right now between the Catholic Church and Orthodox Christians in that country? And is there any tension there?
Well, generally, relations are positive. We have different groups, which make things a little more complicated in Ukraine. So while we have the Catholic Church, which is predominantly Byzantine-Ukrainian Catholic, there are Latin Catholics, though, in Ukraine who are a smaller number, but they do have several dioceses throughout Ukraine, and many religious, especially male and female religious, who are staying in Ukraine. They've committed to stay with their faithful. We also have the larger Orthodox churches, and there are two primary churches, the Orthodox Church of Ukraine, which is seen as self-governing. We call that autocephalous, which is recognized by the Ecumenical Patriarch Bartholomew, and a good portion of world Orthodoxy. But then there also is the Ukrainian Orthodox Church of the Moscow Patriarchate, which is headed by Metropolitan Onufri, which is not autocephalous, but is slightly less self-governing. We call that autonomous, and it is part of the Patriarchate of Moscow. And you can imagine that they're in a more delicate situation. So those are the main groups, and they all have complex relations with each other. And religion is, of course, playing a role in this conflict. And if we listened to any of President Putin's speeches, especially the one announcing the military activity in Ukraine, he specifically cites the situation of Orthodox Christians in Ukraine, what he calls a schism, because Moscow does not recognize the independent Orthodox Church in Ukraine. He cites that religious difference, that religious conflict, as motivation for one of the motivations for his invasion of Ukraine.
Okay, Father Alexander, my engineers are telling me there's a bit of a bad audio connection here with your phone. So we're going to try to reestablish that connection with you, okay? So I'm going to put you in touch with our sound engineer, and we're going to try to get you back on air in just a moment. So unfortunately, we got a bit of a bad cell connection there, but we will try to get Father back in just a moment. But in the meantime, I wanted to share with you, and I'll ask him about this later. If you want to call in, if you do have a question for our guest, Father Alexander Laschuk, a Ukrainian Catholic priest, you can call in 888-914-9149. You're listening to The Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. One of the things that St. Jose Maria Escrivá, the founder of Opus Dei, would say all the time is that these world crises are always crises of saints. And there are definitely going to be new saints. They may not be necessarily canonized. We may not know their names, but there will be all kinds of acts of heroism, new saints forged in the fires of this war. And I'm going to talk to you a little bit later about those 13 brave soldiers on Snake Island in the Black Sea who gave their lives yesterday. Most of you have probably heard about that if you've been, especially on social media, that went pretty viral. There was a woman who challenged some Russian soldiers very bravely. I'm going to talk about that later. But there are also a number of saints and blesseds of the Ukraine from the past that most Catholics are not aware of. But we need to know about them. We also need to ask for their intercession during this time of crisis. And on the Pillar, pillarcatholic.com, and that's a fantastic Catholic journalism website started by a couple of other canon lawyers like our guest today, Father Alexander. I'm talking about Ed Condon. I'm talking about J.D., sorry, his name escapes me at the moment, J.D. Flynn, thank you, Lucas, who founded the Pillar. Shame on me, J.D., I should know better, but it just had a brain cramp for a second, everything that's going on. But they do a tremendous amount of great journalism work in the church, both veterans of the Catholic News Agency, both canon lawyers, and they talked about today on the Pillar website the saints and blesseds of Ukraine. They didn't mention necessarily all of them, but they did mention a few, and I wanted to share them with you because we do need to ask for their intercession. They're pretty inspiring in their own right. I want to talk to you really quickly about Blessed Michalina Josefata Hordashevska. And you probably haven't heard of her, but she was born in Lviv in 1869. She was very pious as a child. In fact, when she was 18, she consecrated herself to God, made a private vow of chastity, and she wanted to enter a contemplative cloistered order of nuns until her spiritual director urged her to think about a new apostolic community of sisters that would serve the poor better as nurses, teachers, catechists, caretakers for children. And so I'm talking about the Sister Servants of Mary Immaculate. They were founded in 1892. Now, Michalina took the name Sister Josefata. She was the first superior of the community at the age of 23. Can you imagine that? And they started with just seven nuns, seven young sisters. Within 10 years, within just one decade, there were 128 sisters in Ukraine. Some of them went to Canada, actually, to serve Ukrainian immigrants living here. Under her leadership, they had an incredible active life. It was very evangelistic, and it became the largest community of women religious in the Ukrainian Greek Catholic Church. But believe it or not, Sister Josefata herself was not permitted to make final profession of vows in the community that she herself had co-founded until 1909. Can you imagine? Would have taken a lot of humility to deal with that, but she did. Had a lot of health problems when she was in her 40s. She was diagnosed with tuberculosis and suffered a very painful, very long illness, and she died at the very young age of 49 in April of 1919. She was beatified in 2001 during Pope St. John Paul II's pastoral visit to Ukraine, and Father Alexander is reconnected now, thankfully, and I'm talking to Father Alexander Laschuk from the Archdiocese of Toronto. He is a Ukrainian Catholic priest. And just before the we sort of lost the connection with you, Father, you were talking about Putin and his somewhat disingenuous claims about the Russian Orthodox Church and the whole role of religion in this conflict. Can you expand on that a little bit more, Father?
Yeah, definitely. Just to say that at least in the what the Russian people are being told, that religion is playing a role here, and there is a division in world Orthodoxy right now between the Church of Russia and the Ecumenical Patriarchate, the Church of Greece, and those churches associated with them, where they're in schism with each other. They've broken Eucharistic communion. Well, the Russian Church has broken Eucharistic communion with the Church of Constantinople, and that's playing out in Ukraine right now, where we see the conflict happening there.
Okay, well, how does Putin deal with the Catholic Church? What is the status of the Catholic Church within Russia right now?
So there are a lot more rules when it comes to religion in the Russian Federation. It is not the same kind of freedom of religion which would exist in a more plural society such as Ukraine. In the Russian Federation, the Roman Catholic Church, the Latin Church, does have legal status and does have dioceses, so that does exist. And the Russian Federation does have diplomatic relations with the Holy See. The Eastern Catholic Church, though, the Ukrainian Catholic Church, does not exist as a legal entity in the Russian Federation. So generally, parishes have been associated with the Roman Catholic diocese. That has caused pastoral challenges because there are over 3 million Ukrainians living in the Russian Federation. And if we look at parts of Russia, the Far East, you know, a lot of them didn't go there voluntarily. You know, they were deported there for their Catholic faith in some cases, and were not able to always adequately minister to them. But the Ukrainian Catholic Church is present in those parts of the Russian Federation, as well as in other countries like Kazakhstan, for example, where we are able to have juridical structures.
Okay, well, thank you for the background on that, Father. And just as we were disconnected there for just a brief moment, I started talking about some of the blesseds, some of the saints of the Ukraine that, and by the way, it's not the Ukraine. I have to catch myself every time. It's Ukraine. But I'm learning. We're all learning about this. But a lot of people want to learn about some of these saints. And I mentioned, I don't know if you caught this when you came back on, but
yeah.
I talked about Blessed Michalina Josefata Hordashevska. Who are some of the others that we ought to be aware of, saints and blesseds of Ukraine?
Yeah, so the Church of Ukraine, the Ukrainian Catholic Church, was really a church of martyrs in the 20th century, because in 1946, after the Second World War, the Soviet Union, when it retook Ukraine, it eventually, after the death of Metropolitan Andrei Sheptytsky, it liquidated the Ukrainian Catholic Church, and the Ukrainian Catholic Church became the largest persecuted religious group in the Soviet Union. And it remained that way until the end of the 1980s, which was during Gorbachev's reforms that they were able to come out of the underground. And that led to their hierarchy being arrested, sent to prison camps, where many of them died in prison camps. And so of the saints and of the blesseds of the Ukrainian Catholic Church from the 20th century, except for Blessed Josefata, who you just mentioned, the rest of them all died martyrs' deaths. Some of them in Ukraine, some of them in Russia, some of them in the Far East in parts of the world like Kazakhstan. And so in Canada, in the United States, there are, you know, you have a very diverse group of saints and blesseds. In Canada, they are all Francophone, interestingly. We don't have any Anglophone saints or blesseds in Canada. But we do have two Ukrainian blesseds in Canada. And one of them is Blessed Nikita of Winnipeg, who was our first Ukrainian bishop appointed here in 1912. The different, a difficult Episcopal ministry here, and eventually went back to Ukraine. And he was arrested in 1946, and he died a martyr's death in Kazakhstan. So we certainly look towards him for intercession. And the other one who is very special to us in Canada is Blessed Vasil Velichkovsky. So after President Kennedy lobbied for the release of Cardinal Felipe after years and years of labor in a Soviet prison camp, in a gulag in Siberia, when President Kennedy was able to get his release, he stopped in a hotel room, and he was able to make contact with then Father Velichkovsky, who he ordained secretly a bishop in the hotel room. And Blessed Vasil was then the only bishop of our Ukrainian Catholic Church in Ukraine at the time, and he would be later able to ordain some bishops as well. But he was eventually arrested, was tortured, was poisoned, and was sent into exile. He was a Redemptorist, a member of that congregation, and our Metropolitan of Winnipeg at the time was also a Redemptorist and invited him here to Canada in his exile. And he came and died about a year later as a result of that poisoning. But so we lost Blessed Nikita's body to the Far East. It's never been found. But Ukraine sent us a martyr as well who died for his Catholic faith.
Wow, I think so many people are unaware of this background and some of these modern-day saints. And I'd like you to talk about, because you are the executive director of the Metropolitan Andre Sheptysky Institute of Eastern Christian Studies at the University of St. Michael's College at the University of Toronto. Talk to me a little bit about Sheptysky. What should people know about him, and why is he so famous as one of the great blesseds of the Ukraine?
So Metropolitan Andrei Sheptysky lived an incredible life. He was a noble person by birth. He was a count. And he gave all of that up to follow his Eastern Catholic faith and become a monk. You know, his parents were not keen on that because that caused some difficulties as a member of the aristocracy. But he was committed to that. So he began, he entered the Basilian Order, the Order of St. Josephat, and eventually was made a bishop. He was a bishop for a very short time in a city called Stanislavio, which is now Ivano-Frankivsk in Ukraine, but quickly was made metropolitan in 1899. And he remained metropolitan from 1899 in the Austria-Hungarian Empire until 1945, when he died in the Soviet Union. So you can imagine the transitions that happened in that part of the world from 1899 to 1945, you know. The Russian Empire, where he was arrested by the Tsar and was in a prison camp. The Soviet Union, Nazi Germany, the Soviet Union again, Poland, Austria-Hungary, just incredible times of transition for our entire world. And he led his faithful through that entire period.
Yeah, and I think what's so inspiring about him, too, is that when he was arrested in 1947, apparently he was pressured to renounce his Catholic faith and serve as a Russian Orthodox priest, and he refused to do so. And obviously the Catholic Church does view the Orthodox churches of the East as real churches with real bishops, real sacraments, but that attachment to the Roman Catholicity of the Church, to the papacy, he was not going to give that up. And as you mentioned, he died a martyr in a Russian prison in 1951, but his brother Leon was also murdered as well, along with his wife, right?
So Metropolitan Andrei, his brother does die as a martyr. His brother also, he had other siblings, but one of his brothers is Clementi Sheptysky, who was also a monk, became in a different order, and he died a martyr's death, Blessed Clementi Sheptysky. Metropolitan Andrei himself has not been beatified, but he has been declared servant of God by the Holy See, so his cause is progressing. But, you know, we look to him because he not only showed us a great ability to lead his faithful, but he was a man who loved the church, loved his people, lived very simply. You know, he was a very wealthy man. He was extremely simply supported seminaries, supported religious works, supported artistic works. And he also supported orphans, supported Jews during the Holocaust. You know, many people, you can read about Metropolitan Andrei supporting, secretly hiding Jewish people during the Holocaust, which was, of course, not an easy thing to do. The great work that he did for his Catholic faith.
Oh, that's unbelievable.
And then maybe just to mention that those martyrs, they could have renounced their faith, right? They could have accepted the Orthodox Church. The Orthodox Church led, well, the Soviet government orchestrated what we call the pseudo-sobor of Lviv, where they liquidated the Ukrainian Catholic Church. And none of the bishops would participate in that, and many of the priests would not participate in that, and they were arrested for that.
My guest today on the Cale Clark Show is Father Alexander Laschuk, Ukrainian Catholic priest and also professor and a director at the University of Toronto at St. Michael's College. And one thing that most people may have assumed about you, but I'll make it explicit, because you are a Ukrainian Catholic priest, you are married, you have a family of children. Do you ever get any sideways glances from people in the Latin Rite or Roman Rite Catholics who are saying, well, you know, what's up with that? What are your thoughts on this, on being a married priest? How has it affected your ministry?
So definitely, you know, we have a lot of married priests in the Eastern Catholic churches, at least in my part of the world. You know, we are predominantly married clergy. And in Ukraine, it is the majority Ukrainian clergy are married. But it's a different reality, right? It's a very different reality. It's a different life. It's a different parish life. And you have to be careful when I'm dealing with, I work for the Archdiocese. If I'm preaching at a Roman Catholic parish, I'm not talking about my marriage or my children, right? Because people are sometimes going to be a bit thrown off by that. You know, if I'm in a smaller, more intimate group, of course, we'll have those conversations. Mm-hmm. But I do have two children, and I'm married with two children, and my wife's father actually is also a pastor, Ukrainian Catholic priest, and her grandfather, our great-grandfather was a pastor too. And it creates a different, certainly a different way of living ministry, totally different, because, in some ways we can see the freedom that celibacy will give a priest, that's one side of the coin. But on the other side of the coin, sometimes it's almost a 2-for-1 package, right? Like you get the wife for free who sometimes is doing more work in the parish than the priest is, right? So, I always say it's not one size fits all, and every priest is different. Of course, your listeners will know that. And it's the same like that with married clergy. But it definitely offers a very different way to demonstrate the domestic church in the context of the community of faith.
Yeah, it's so fascinating. And yeah, I can see wives perhaps being the unpaid parish employee and maybe the executive director behind the scenes for sure. But I always say to people that my wife is the shadow producer of this radio show, for example, my wife Patricia, because she comes up with so many great ideas for the show. And she's really the brains behind this microphone. But Lord knows I don't have any, but I remember reading, I think it was Father Dwight Longnecker, who's a convert to Catholicism. He's, I think, from an Episcopalian background. And he was talking about the idea that, well, okay, what if the Roman Rite, what if the Roman Catholic Church, because most Catholics are in the Roman Rite, what if there was a dispensation from celibacy in terms of holy orders to the priesthood? Obviously, celibacy isn't intrinsic to the priesthood. There are some married priests like him. Most of them are converts in the Roman Rite, but of course there are Eastern Rite Catholics like yourself. And he always said that really in the Roman Rite, there isn't really a setup for a married clergy with a family like there is in maybe the Protestant communities where they have like rectories that can actually house a family properly. Are Ukrainian and other Eastern Rites within the Catholic Church a little bit more set up along those lines?
So generally, yes, we're aware that, there probably will be a family in the residence. So if there's a parish rectory, usually it's something suitable for family life and not, say, little cells almost or apartments sometimes that would be more common in a Roman Catholic parish. But there definitely is a culture of married clergy that exists in the Christian East and that might exist in some communities from the Reformation that's not present in the Latin Church, right? There's just a way of, the role of your family, the behavior expected, boundaries or lack thereof, all these kinds of things are just not present. And we do see this sometimes when there are, even sometimes with married deacons. Of course, we do have married clergy in the Latin Church. They're just, they're deacons, right? They're not priests.
Right.
Where that culture has been lost, right? But the model of ministry, it's very different when we have married clergy because, of course, there are different obligations on that man. There's a family present, even safe environment rules, all these things are have to be adapted if the man is married. It's just a completely different setup and requires different finances as well, of course.
Yeah, that's for sure. And so, yeah, obviously right now, I don't think, most Roman Rite parishes are set up for that or are prepared for such a thing. I'm not saying that the dispensation from celibacy is going to be given anytime soon. Of course not. But a lot of people do talk about this. My non-Catholic friends, because I spent some years as a Protestant minister, came back into the Catholic Church. They ask me about this a lot. Why don't they drop the dispensation, or give the dispensation rather, and maybe get more clergy in the Roman Rite? I don't know. There's an argument to be made. I'm not here to make that argument today, but I think it's a fascinating peek into that life. And I thank you for sharing that, Father. And by the way, just for people out there who might not know, all of these priests are married before ordination.
Yes.
Okay. So actually, we got to take a quick break. Can you hang with me through the break, Father?
For sure.
And we can explain that a little bit on the other side. So if you want to talk to my guest, Father Alexander Lafchuk, you can call in right now, 888-914-9149. Be right back on the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/forester.
Helping you keep your mind off traffic and on the more important things in life. It's Cale Clark on Relevant Radio.
Hey, welcome back to the program. 888-914-9149 is the number to call if you have a question for my guest today. 888-914-9149, talking with Father Alexander Lafchuk from the Archdiocese of Toronto and from the University of Toronto, St. Michael's College. He's a Ukrainian Rite priest. He is a married priest. We were just talking about this before the break. We were talking about the conflict in the Ukraine. And just before we went to break, I asked him about his family, his kids, and how it kind of works in terms of ordination of married men in the Eastern rites of the church. And I did some studies, Father Alexander, on the apostolic background of priestly celibacy. There's some pretty good ones out there. Stefan Hyde wrote a book about this a few years ago. And it's fascinating to delve into the history of it. But in terms of the modern day, can you just explain to people listening who can be ordained in terms of if you're a married man, how does it go? Like you have to be obviously married before your ordination, correct?
Exactly. You have to be married. The current discipline in the Catholic Church is before your diaconal ordination. In some parts of Orthodoxy and in ancient times, it was subdiaconate. But today in the Catholic Church is before your ordination to the diaconate. And then that's it.
And if your wife were, God forbid, to pass away, you are not allowed to be remarried once you're ordained, correct?
Exactly. That's the situation. If you know, something horrible happens, you're in that new state of, you know, not being married, and that's certainly a challenge in some cases, yes.
And the way it goes is that a bishop must be drawn from the ranks of the celibate clergy, correct?
Exactly. For the last just over 1,000 years, in Orthodoxy as well, The bishop is always a celibate priest, and sometimes a widower. That has definitely happened in history, but it was not someone who is currently married.
And just so people know out there as well, even in the Latin Rite for Roman Rite Catholics, we have married deacons, of course, in the Catholic Church. And the same applies to them. If their wife passes away, they are not allowed to remarry either.
That's exactly correct. You know, that once you're ordained, that forms a impediment, we say, you know, it prevents you from ever getting married.
Okay. Well, we do have a caller with a question for you, Father. Dee Dee from Phoenix is calling on the line. You're live on the air with Father Alexander Lafchuk. What's your question, Dee Dee?
Alexander, I hope you won't consider my question delicate, but I'm going to ask anyway. What percentage of the population in the Ukraine are Protestant? And do the Protestants have a history of martyrdom, dying for the faith? And what status do they hold in Putin's party?
An interesting question, Father. What do you think about that?
That's a very interesting question. So I don't know numbers of Protestants in Ukraine, but I would say certainly they are present. And in some regions, there are very significant percentages of the population. There are some who have been there for a long time. For example, Lutherans have been in Ukraine for centuries, definitely. Some are much, much newer groups from the United States, especially, who are there, you know, working on mission, different projects. I know a Ukrainian Catholic man who told me once, "Oh, I've been to Ukraine before when I was a Protestant," and he was there on mission. Hmm. So certainly those groups are present in Ukraine. Now, in the Russian Federation, many of those groups will not have legal status. You could easily, if you Googled around about, you know, Jehovah's Witnesses in the Russian Federation or different groups, they often do not have legal status in the Russian Federation, and certainly have been persecuted in the Soviet Union as well for their Christian faith, definitely.
Okay, that's a very good question, Dee Dee. Thanks for asking it. That was Dee Dee calling from Phoenix. And my guest today on the Cale Clark Show is Father Alexander Lafchuk. from the University of Toronto, St. Michael's College, and also from the Archdiocese of Toronto. And one of the things that you do with the Archdiocese, Father, is you work in the marriage tribunal, and you're very involved as a canon lawyer with this. And I remember once being at a conference, and I was speaking at this conference, and one of the other speakers was a guy named, I don't know if you met him, Pete Verrey. I don't know, he was based out of Ottawa at the time. Do you know him?
Yes.
Okay. Well, he's a canon lawyer as well. He worked on a marriage tribunal. And one of the things he said in his talk, I'll never forget this, is that he said, when I started working at the marriage tribunal, he said his goal was to get rid of all these annulments. He thought the church granted way too many annulments, and this, he was going to put a stop to it. People were treating it like a Catholic divorce. And then he said he started working on the actual cases. And he said, man, we probably don't give enough annulments, in the sense that he was flabbergasted at how many invalid marriages there actually were. Can you speak to your experience with this and what you're seeing on the ground?
Yeah, certainly. So, you know, the marriage tribunal is an interesting place to work because it, you know, really has a lot in common almost with hearing confessions. Like you're encountering people at their vulnerable state. They're coming to the church to reconcile themselves. So it's a very interesting ministry. And certainly you encounter some absolutely crazy situations, you know, totally crazy that you would never have thought could possibly happen. In a place like Toronto, we have a lot of migrants too, right? They've come from all over the world. Parts of the world where, say, females don't have many civil rights, you know, and when they get to Canada, they're able to rid themselves of some of those situations. So, you know, we've had like literal shotgun weddings, all kinds of stuff, which unfortunately are not infrequent in some parts of the world. And so it's about trying to see what the situation is and what does the church say about that marriage. And it's one way the church ministers to divorced Catholics, but it's not the only way. And it's not always a possible solution for some persons, of course. But there are marriages that are not declared null that are sometimes very, very horrible experiences for the people, right? But it just that problem isn't there from the beginning. And the church has to figure out how to minister to those people in a different way.
Yeah, my guest is Father Alexander Leschuk here on the Cale Clark Show. I want you to expand on that a little bit more because, again, there is this perception out there among some Catholics, some non-Catholics, that an annulment is basically a Catholic divorce, but that's not what it's all about. It looks at whether there was a valid marriage in the beginning. Can you kind of comment on that? And also maybe a sidebar to that question, what do you think the state is of the education level about marriage in the church right now in North America that might be leading to some of these problems in the first place?
Yeah, so those are great questions. So I'd say that first, to the first point, that a declaration of nullity or an annulment is something that says there was something missing from the very beginning. So did this couple freely and with a basic level of understanding, you know, commit to a marriage that was open to life, that was unitive, you know, it was exclusive between the two, that was permanent, you know, and when we start to examine some of these marriages, and, you know, I'm sure some of your listeners are, you know, know what the catechism is and probably have opened it and those sorts of things. Whereas, you know, if we kind of go to more, what's the base level, maybe the average level sometimes that we're looking at, that awareness is not there. And the Holy Father has talked about this a lot. That he's actually used this phrase about a marriage catechumenate, that maybe we should have a catechumenate to marriage to prepare people. Because, you know, you have kind of three types of marriage prep. We have that we receive, you know, in our family life. We have that we remotely receive from marriage. And then when we're, you know, actually getting married, we go through that sort of formal preparation for marriage. And, you know, in the church today in North America, we're pretty good at that third one, you know, when we're preparing people for marriage, we, you know, make sure that they go through these topics. But that cultural formation for marriage, which would be in a family life or maybe at least in a broader cultural situation, is often lacking today. People are not necessarily raised with the awareness that marriage is an exclusive relationship between one woman and one man, or that marriage cannot just be broken. It's not something you can say, yeah, I'm done with this, I'm going to contract a new one. That awareness is totally lost on many Catholics who come to church for marriage. Now, hopefully that is addressed in formation, but it's not always done sufficiently. And the other problem is sometimes people just, they know the answers, they need to tell the priest, and they do that. But reality is separate.
Those are really, really pertinent thoughts. My guest is Father Alexander Laschuk from the Archdiocese of Toronto, St. Michael's College as well. If you have a question for him about the Ukraine crisis, about the faith in the Ukraine, about any of the stuff that he's talking about, you can call in right now, 888-914-9149. Tell me about your work at the university and the Eastern Christian studies that go on there.
Yeah, so the Metropolitan Andrei Sheptytsky Institute was started in the 1980s, actually in Chicago, and then in 1988, as a project of the Ukrainian Catholic bishops, it was brought to Ottawa, to St. Paul University. We eventually moved to the University of St. Michael's College and the University of Toronto, which is a absolutely top-tier research university here in Toronto. Well, we are part of the Faculty of Theology, and that offers us a chance to offer courses in Eastern Christian Studies in that faculty, which are, our center kind of is the Church of Kyiv, the Ukrainian Catholic Church especially, but our courses are much broader than that, and looking at the breadth of Eastern Christianity in its very different expressions, and offering that in a Catholic university in one of the largest metropolitan centers in Canada, or North America actually, but also in the University of St. Michael's College is part of an ecumenical consortium called the Toronto School of Theology, which has other Catholic colleges, but also Protestant colleges that can learn about the Church Fathers or learn about canon law or these things that they're not otherwise going to learn.
That's fantastic. And I've been in it. The Toronto School of Theology, so I know all about that. And let me ask you this, Father, as an Eastern Rite priest, if a Roman Rite Catholic could attend, and not everybody has had the chance to do this in their life, but if a Roman Catholic walked into a divine liturgy, a Ukrainian Catholic liturgy, what differences would they encounter? What would it be like for them? Can you explain that to the people?
Yeah, so, I mean, I'll talk about the Byzantine Rite because there are, over 20 Eastern Rites, and they're very distinct. But if you went in general to an Eastern church, you'll find that the liturgy is much longer. The daily liturgy, certainly, you can get a Mass in 15 minutes. That's generally not possible in the Christian East. And on a Sunday, if everything was done very fully, liturgy could easily, at a regular parish, be an hour to an hour and a half. And that parish might have matins before that too, which could be another hour, an hour and a half on top of that. So we kind of go all out, I guess, in terms of worship. And that happens with the sounds, with the singing. It happens with the smells, lots of incense, the sights. You look around and every inch of the walls are painted often with icons. And a way for us to really activate our entire being into our worship, even how we our postures, that people are kneeling, people are standing. In Lent, we're doing prostrations down to the ground. There's a lot happening that you might not see in a Latin church.
Yeah, and I remember attending for the first time an Eastern Rite liturgy at the 2008 Eucharistic Congress in Quebec City, which is kind of like the Olympics of the church every 4 years. And I remember, of course, your boss and a good friend of the program, Cardinal Collins, was there. And I found it beautiful. And I also found it really striking, too, that during the scripture readings, or before the readings, people would call out, "Wisdom, be attentive."
Yes.
And I just love that. And I thought it was great. So that's always been a catchphrase of mine after that. And we do need to listen to the Word of God. And yeah, just the it really does transport you, I think, to another realm. It really gets you. I don't know. It's hard to explain, but I was very moved by the liturgy, and so I encourage people if they do get a chance to try to experience an Eastern Rite Catholic liturgy at some point in their life. And so, thanks for shedding some light on that. Well, really appreciate you taking the time today, Father. I know it was on short notice, but I'm really glad we got a hold of you. I've been wanting to talk to you and pick your brain for a little while. So I'm really glad we had the chance to do this. And how can people get a hold of you? How can people find you, for example, on social media, on Twitter?
Yeah, so on Twitter, it's at BYZ Canonist. So BYZ K-A-N-O-S. Sorry, I've spelled it.
K-A-N-O-N-I-S-T. Buys Canonist with a K.
And you tweeted me out today. So if you've just found you, you found you, then you'd see me. Sheptytsky is hard to spell, but if you Googled Sheptytsky Institute, you'd find me there as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, listen, I really appreciate you taking the time, and we're obviously going to all be praying for the situation in the Ukraine.
Pray for Ukraine, please. Pray. Yeah.
Yeah, and offer sacrifices
and our patriarch
as well.
Is staying. He's staying in KU. He's there right now, probably, you know, hearing air raid sirens. So pray for him.
Yeah, they're all kind of huddled under the in the basement of the cathedral, right? I know he
in the cathedral. Yep.
He was supposed to go to Rome. Obviously, he canceled that trip when these hostilities began, and he's with the people. There are a number of nuns as well, a number of communities that are still there ministering to people in Ukraine. And, yeah, we do need to pray and offer sacrifices. So thank you very much again for reminding us of that
and
for taking the time today.
Thank you, and God bless you, and God bless your listeners.
Thank you very much. That was Father Alexander Laschuk from the University of Toronto and the Archdiocese of Toronto. Wow, so that was a great conversation about Eastern Catholicism, about what's going on in the Ukraine, and I really appreciate him taking the time. And once again, you can follow him on Twitter at BYZCanonist, B-Y-Z. There's my Canadian-ness coming out, Z instead of Z. BYZKANONIST. All right, so we'll be right back after this short break on the Cale Clark Show. If you want to react to this, call in 888-914-9149.
This is the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
Welcome back to the program, 888-914-9149. Just had a great conversation with Father Alexander Laschuk from the University of Toronto, a Ukrainian Catholic priest, about the situation that was going on there, about canonize, a canon law. We talked about marriage tribunals. We talked about the Eastern Rite liturgies. Fascinating stuff. Married priest. He's a married priest with children, as many Eastern Rite priests are. And so if you missed that conversation, you can check the podcast, which should be up at about, well, about an hour after this program ends. And as I said off the top, there are lots of saints and blesseds of the Ukraine that most Catholics aren't aware of, but there's obviously going to be a lot of new saints forged in the fires of the resistance against the Russian invasion. And there's been a couple of notable incidents over the last 24 hours that went viral. One Ukrainian woman, I don't know if you saw this, but there's no sense in really playing the video because it's all in Russian. I can't understand. I'm sure most people listening can't either. But there's a viral video of a Ukrainian woman telling a Russian soldier to put a bunch of sunflower seeds in his pocket. She's like, here, take these sunflower seeds, stick them in your pocket. The sunflower is the national flower of the Ukraine. So when you look on social media, for example, on Twitter, a lot of people who are reporting on the conflict, reporting on the war, they'll have a sunflower in their bio, a picture of a sunflower emoji, if you will. And the reason why the Ukrainian woman is saying this to the soldier is basically, so listen, I want you to put these sunflower seeds in your pocket because when you die on our soil, I want our national flower to grow up out of your grave. Wow. So this takes a lot of moxie, a lot of moxie. So we don't know what this woman's name is, but you can find the video if you just Google Ukrainian woman sunflower seeds. It'll come up. And she was voicing her outrage at a soldier, a Russian soldier, who was blocking a street in a residential area. It was the port city of Henischek in southern Ukraine, and that has been occupied by the Russian army. They've erected a bunch of roadblocks there. And the woman is standing about just a couple feet from the armed soldier and angrily demanding why he's there. She's saying, "Your occupants, your fascists, take these seeds, put them in your pockets so at least sunflowers will grow up when you all die here." And so this was, it's definitely gone viral. Within just a few hours, it had almost 100,000 likes. Lots of people really chiming in the comments as well to praise her courage. And then a very chilling video came out of Snake Island in the Black Sea, which was a strategic defense area, a very, very small island. An entire garrison of 13 Ukrainian soldiers were killed after they refused to surrender to the Russian Navy. And again, this probably went even more viral than the woman with the seeds. One of the soldiers actually live streamed the attack on social media. There's a really short clip of just a few seconds. You can hear the soldier talking, and then there's a very loud boom, heavy weaponry, and he drops to the ground. It's very chilling. This is about, by the way, Snake Island, 30 miles off the coast of Ukraine, and it's at the very edge of its territory, its territorial waters. And so it's kind of become a rallying cry for Ukrainians. It's kind of become the source of national pride in the resistance. And the Ukrainian president, Volodymyr Zelensky, said they died heroically while trying to protect the island. So you can see in the clip there's the Russian naval ship does sound out a warning to the soldiers, and they say in Russian, of course, this is a military warship. This is a Russian military warship. I suggest you lay down your weapons and surrender to avoid bloodshed and needless casualties. Otherwise, you will be bombed. And you can hear the Ukrainian soldiers talking to each other, and they're taking it almost incredibly lightly. They're like, no, should we tell them to go blank themselves? You know, and I'm obviously sanitizing this. This is a family show. But this has been incredibly inspiring to Ukrainian people and really the rest of the world. And not only do they refuse to surrender, but they actually turn up the volume to make sure that the Russian warship will hear their response. And they're basically saying, no, we are not going to surrender. Russian warship, go blank yourself. And then right after that, the shelling begins and they are all killed. And so an incredibly heroic act. And there have been a lot of people who have willingly given their lives already in the Ukrainian army. I read about one soldier who they were blowing up a bridge to prevent a bunch of Russian tanks from rolling in. And the only way he could do it is if he went down with the bridge. So he set the ammunition, set the explosion, knowing that he would die as well. So a lot of people giving their lives to defend Ukraine. And we certainly need to pray and keep the situation top of mind and make a lot of spiritual sacrifices. Pope Francis, as you probably heard, has declared that this coming Ash Wednesday, this Wednesday, March the 2nd, he wants it to be a day of prayer and fasting specifically for the end of the war in Ukraine. And obviously this war in Ukraine, it's going to be like none other, because this is the first real global conflict that we've had in the last few years in this age of social media, where you're going to be able to see things on a daily basis that are pretty disturbing. And so I just want to caution everybody to maybe moderate your use of technology during this time and spend a little bit more time in prayer and fasting, making spiritual sacrifices for Ukraine, because it can be so easy to get drawn into this spiral of social media and the news cycle. And understand this could be a very long conflict. This is only the beginning. I pray that I'm wrong about that, and I pray that it'll end very, very much in short order. But a lot of that's going to depend on prayers and sacrifices from people like you and me. So let's try to make that happen. Let's try to make that happen. It's been a good week, though, being with you on the K.O. Clark Show. I really want to thank my guest, Father Alexander Laschuk, from the University of Toronto, joining me today, Ukrainian Catholic priest, shed a lot of light on the situation and on his life and ministry as well. And I really want to hope that you guys have a great weekend, a blessed weekend. Next week, don't forget, Lent begins next Wednesday. And we've certainly got a lot of things to focus our attention on as we fast, as we make sacrifices, especially for the people who are suffering so much right now in Ukraine. God bless you. It's been the K.O. Clark Show. Lucas Holt produced. Patrick Galog took your phone calls. Tim Rees up next, followed by Father Rocky and the Family Rosary Across America. Take it away, Michaela.
Thank you for listening to my daddy.